Hello and welcome to the Awaken the Nest for June. We're talking about generosity this month. So we're going to start with, I'm just going to give you a preview. I said this in the email, but I'm just going to give you a preview that we're going to talk about having conversations and being generous in conversation. So in other words, we're going to repair some of the social disconnection that's been happening. And it's been happening not just in the past couple of years, but due to the pandemic, but it's been happening for a much longer time. Trust me. But before we begin that, we're going to start with some grounding as usual. And what I want to invite you to do is actually stand up. And I'm going to move my computer table back just so I can be with you on the screen. I'm going to actually see a bit more of my whole body. So what we're going to do is just experience some breath. It's always fun when I mess with the Zoom setup. But now I have to look down at everybody and everyone has to get up and move around instead of just sitting on your butt all day. Okay. So we're going to just focus on first feeling your feet. And just allowing your feet to fully occupy the earth. Feeling the sense of grounding into the earth. And welcoming that grounding up into your legs and into your torso and into your arms and your head. Notice if you feel, as you tune into this earth energy, if you feel any kind of a downward pull, like a magnetic force, that's the earth's energy pulling you down. And you may not feel it, that's totally fine if you don't feel it, but it's working regardless. You are putting attention on the earth and on your feet. Then we'll just invite some breath. On your inhale, as you breathe in, imagine the breath going all the way down your legs and rooting into the earth. So as if your feet will be rooted into the earth with your inhale. And then on your exhale, you're drawing more earth energy up through your feet and into your body. So in other words, imagine you're a tree. And if you'd like, you can open your arms and extend them. And just feel that breath. So inhaling, rooting down, feeling really, really going deep into the earth. Then exhaling, drawing up beautiful energy, that like the way that a tree draws up nutrients from the soil. Bringing your ears back in line with your shoulders so that your head's not too forward. Maybe even just doing a mini back bend. We'll get some little tiny back bend here. The upper back, not the lower back, but the upper back. Just breathing here. And just noticing if you want to do a little shake or any kind of movement with your body. Anything that you feel like you need just to get here, get present. Maybe a little head nod. Yeah. And when you're ready, when you feel like you have filled up enough, we'll come back and take your seat. And I will bring everything back into the regular Zoom lens. So we are going to start today. We're going to start and end with some journaling. And I'd ask you to just get out your journals and just have them ready. And I'm going to describe three scenarios around social interaction. And you'll maybe as I describe any of these three, you might find one of them that sort of triggers you more than the others. This is on purpose because the point of today is to really dive into some of our greatest fears around social interaction and then learn how to work with them. So here's the three scenarios, and I'll allow you to just tune into which of these is most relevant to you. So first one is you're at a party. You've been invited to this party. You don't know anybody and you're completely alone. You know, maybe you came with one friend and they're off doing their thing. And you see this group of people who is on the other side of the room and they look really interesting, but they're all engaged in conversation. They're laughing. And it's clear that they know each other really well. And you don't know how to get into that. Okay, that's scenario one. Scenario two, you're on either a date, like either a romantic date or, you know, meeting a new friend for the first time. You're really intrigued by this person, but you know nothing about them. And that's scenario two. Scenario three is that you're at home. You have a long-term partner and you're at home with them alone. And the house is quiet and there's no TV, there's no visitors, there's no kids. It's just you two. And you really want to connect, but you're not quite sure how. So I'll ask you, in the choose your own adventure of this scenario, these three scenarios, which of these triggers you the most? Which of these, and when I say trigger, it's not to bring up fear and have you sit in this place of fear. It's to be aware of where you have some wounds that need to be tended to. So taking that, open your journals, and we're just going to spend a few minutes writing about all the things that challenge you in social situations and social interactions. So you can either make a simple list on your journal with the header that says something like what I hate about talking to other humans, or you can write about an experience, perhaps something from one of these three scenarios or something else where this kind of discomfort was present. And we will do just 3 minutes of this, okay? About 30 seconds left. Okay. And just finish your last sentence wherever you are. Okay. Now that you're in touch with some of the greatest fears around this, and maybe you didn't, I just want to offer that potentially there might be some of you who didn't have great fears about social interaction, that it's actually super easy and you missed it and you loved it. And if that is the case, then congratulations. Generally speaking, there's right now, where I want to start right now is this admission that we're all pretty crippled in how we engage socially these days, all of us. And in my humble opinion, we've had this problem for a very, very, very long time. Now, COVID, certainly, you know, us being forced to avoid social contact for a couple of years, and not only being mandated to avoid it, but also having this fear around it. And for some people, a very real fear. And for some people, a fear that was perhaps not as real, I'll put it that way. In terms of, and I say this, in terms of your risk of getting very, very sick from COVID, right? There was a lot of different experiences within that. And I respect everyone's experience, but I'll say that before COVID, even though we had this experience of people being very, very, very challenged with starting or maintaining a conversation, even with friends that they've known for a very long time, but certainly meeting new people, meeting strangers has, and creating meaningful intimacy with new people has been an issue that I have witnessed in many of my clients' lives and in many of my friends' lives for years before COVID even happened. And I will say, though, that since the pandemic, the problem has grown exponentially. I remember our first time after pretty much not having any social interaction, we had some people come over last summer. I think it was my birthday. And I felt exhausted at the end of that day. I laid down and I just sat in my bed for about an hour and a half and just could not even speak anymore, because we do grow out of this. We lose our ability. Now, it's a really funny problem to have, this difficulty with social interaction, because we're inherently social animals and it's actually wired into us to need other people. There's research that shows that primates are the most social of all of the animals, and humans are the most social of the primates. So biologically, we need each other. If we have one another, biologically speaking, our chances of survival increase tremendously. And the human body is always interested in survival. So some of the things that other people bring to us are access to food, variety in the gene pool, and of course, pleasure. And one of the things very relevant to our conversation today is that being with other people is a way that we learn appropriate or inappropriate behavior. So in other words, other people teach us how to behave, and this is for better or worse. So we get a lot of bad habits from people, but we also get a lot of really good things. Like think about something like ethics, or knowing if we were, you know, still living on the savannah, knowing which foods are poisonous. We learn appropriate and inappropriate behavior through other people. If we didn't have that, we would have a much less chance of survival, much smaller chance of survival. However, it can certainly get whacked, and we learn a lot of things that don't really bring us a lot of benefit from other people, which, you know, some of them are in fact our inability to communicate right now. There's 1,000 memes on the internet. If you were to go on the internet, there's 1,000 memes that talk about the difficulty that younger people have in making phone calls. just ordering a sandwich, ordering a pizza. Like there's these, it's a almost like a meta meme at this point where somebody is trying to rehearse ordering a sandwich or a pizza, because this is, you know, these are the younger generations who have been only raised with phones. And I remember when I was 19 back in, I don't know when that was, in like 1997 or 1998, realizing I no longer had to go into the bank because I could just use the ATM. But I had, until that point, I had been taught by society that I need human interaction. So here we are in this push-pull between really, really needing each other. And not just for this biological reason, not just for the learning social mores, but on an emotional level, we need each other. And yet at the same time, we are over here with our collective social anxiety. So it sounds like a really strange problem, a strange dilemma, a strange push-pull, needing other people, afraid to death of them, or not sure how to actually engage in a meaningful way beyond just a, hey, how's it going? So it is a strange problem. It is a strange problem. And it points to a good thing, ultimately, which is the mind's ability to shift and change. Now, we often hear, if you're in the yoga and spiritual world, you'll often hear of the difficulty of the mind. You know, it's known to be really challenging because it's largely because the mind can get fixed. It can get trained by other people, by other social mores to be in a certain way of thinking. And so the good news is that when something has been trained once, it's possible to retrain it. We used to think that the mind was a lot more rigid, and the concept of neuroplasticity has shown us that even in adulthood, what we used to think was that children were very plastic and they could be molded and their thought process was very easily shifted. And then once you got to a certain age, there was no more. You were just the way you were. And what neuroplasticity has shown is that there's actually a tremendous amount of flexibility that's available. So it's not just about, you're not just the way that you are. The mind is not just this difficult companion that we have to work with. Now, what we tend to think, however, if you're again in the spiritual yoga world, is that we have to really beat the mind into submission. So for instance, we have to force ourselves into social experiences so that we can relearn how to engage. We have to kind of like, okay, I'm going to force myself to go talk to this person. I'm going to force myself to go to this party. I'm going to force myself to engage meaningfully with this person in some form. And I want to offer a bit of a different perspective that we're going to play with today. We're going to have a lot of play today. And that perspective is that there are two ways that change in the mind can happen that are not about forcing or pushing the mind. The first is through pleasure, and the second is through meaningful social interaction. So we learn bad habits from each other, but there's this other amazing thing called co-regulation. If anyone's ever heard of that term, it's used a lot in psychology. It's used a lot in somatics and understanding of emotional well-being. So it's a fancy word, co-regulation. It's a fancy word to describe what happens when two people come together, two or more, to help one or more person stabilize emotionally. So this is what happens when a parent or a caregiver responds to our needs appropriately when we're infants and we're dependent on them. It's what happens when a friend is able to make you laugh when you're crying, or to just hold you when you need to be held. And it's breathing together. It's finding love in the madness together. That's co-regulation. And for anyone who's in my one-on-one sessions, we're doing this. We're engaged in this experience all the time. But outside of that specifically, it happens in conversation. which is why we're talking about this. When we engage with people socially, when we have meaningful social interaction, we are oftentimes reshaping the mind in some form because it's pleasurable. It actually is pleasurable to have social interaction. We've just been trained to believe that sometimes it is anxiety producing. When we're in a state of co-regulation, we're at the highest level that the nervous system, at which the nervous system can operate. It goes into a state of absolute relaxation, of openness, of willingness, of plasticity. And this allows the body to repair on a biochemical level, to repair hormonally from the effects of stress. And it also allows for play. If we're in this state of meaningful social interaction, we can be in a state of playfulness. And that playfulness, again, is what allows us to shift and not be so rigid. So what prevents us from getting here? And because it's like we have this, like this need to get there. We have this need for social interaction, meaningful social interaction. And yet we have anxiety about crossing into that space. And I'll share with you what I have seen is that the issue with most people when they enter a social situation, it's that they are overly self-aware. So I can do this when I was many years ago, I began to see this when I was doing energy healing works on people, energy healing sessions. And I'd actually see there was this pattern. There's a big motorcycle going by right now. There's a pattern of the energy where it actually, the attention is moving in a boomerang form, where it's saying, I'm looking at myself from the outside in. I am constantly overly self-aware of what I'm doing. And they're not seeing anything except for how they're responding to external people or other stimuli. They're only seeing how they're responding. So what this might feel like is you're at a party and you're talking to someone and you suddenly go, oh my God, does my hair look weird? did my voice sound funny when I said that? And so you're no longer focused. You don't have that generous gaze. You're not out on someone else. You're actually just constantly referring back to yourself. This is the biggest conversation killer you could possibly have. That's the way to never have a good friend. That's the way to never have a meaningful interaction, is just to be constantly evaluating, policing yourself, scanning. Have I done something wrong? Am I offending someone? Now, this is indicative of the way that we do learn from other people because we're constantly evaluating. Have we crossed over a boundary? Have we crossed a social moray? Have we done something that will allow us to have more intimacy? Because ultimately, this is what we're seeking, is more intimacy with people so that we can co-regulate and have these beautiful experiences. But it can go too far. So this is the issue. People are self-aware and they're losing the potential, the possibility for a generous gaze on the other person. And they're losing that within generosity, there's a state of curiousness that comes. Curious energy is facing a different direction. Curious energy is out like this. So if you're at a museum, and we're going to play with this in a minute, but I'm just going to give this example. If you're at a museum, I'm an art lover. So I'm at a museum and I'm staring at a piece of art. I am not thinking about what that art thinks I look like. I am looking at that canvas. I'm looking at the colors. I'm looking at the forms on there. And I'm truly appreciating what I see or not. There's a little bit of this like evaluation of like, I don't really like that kind of art, but I'm going to go over to this one. And this one I really like. And when I find something I really like, I get curious about it and I can stare and sit and linger in front of a painting. I've done this for hours at times. When I lived in New York City, this was a Saturday afternoon for me, is just go to the Met and just stare for hours at some of my favorite work. And there's an endless amount of things that you can get from that experience. And this is what we can do with other people. Because people, each one of us, is a work of art. We are all fascinating human beings. Fascinating human beings. So we're going to play a game in a minute about how to do this and how to hold a generous gaze. And we're going to do this with an inanimate object so that you could test what this feels like. But first, I want to share a little bit more about the conversation aspect and generosity. There are times when conversations feel so good, so meaningful. You get off the phone call or you leave the experience with another person and you're just like, wow, I feel enlivened. And there's a reason for that, is that the conversation was a dance between generosity and receiving. So last month's theme of receiving and this month's theme of generosity have to work together. And this is true in conversation. This is true in good sex. This is true in every meaningful interaction that you have, is that there is this dance and it's fluid. Now, these two are like yin and yang, generosity and receiving. They are ultimately going to exist in balance, but they can be easily disrupted. So when we are too self-aware, we are too much in the shadow side of the receiving. We become overly conscious of our own needs and our own appearance, and we stop focusing on that thing in front of us that we're supposed to focus on. And generosity can have a shadow side as well. So if we push our gaze too far out and never, like you've ever had this conversation where it feels like an interview, where somebody just keeps on filling you with questions and it doesn't allow them to open up. And the opening, the intimacy comes from that both parties understanding where to be generous and where to receive. So I'm just going to do a little bit of defining these two states here. The generous state, I'm going to read something that I wrote. I'm going to quote myself here because it's fun to do and I can. Okay, this is actually from the anchor post that went out last week, but I'm going to read it again because it's a very, very important way to understand the energy of generosity. The wisdom of generosity is more an attitude than an action. It's a leaning forward in anticipation of another's greatness, a move that shuts out all sounds except for their voice and sweeps all visuals from the field except for their form. And if you get really good, a generous gaze will cause all thoughts about anything but what you're giving yourself over to cease immediately. So if you think about those really amazing conversations that you've had, notice how you felt. That energy, that attitude of leaning forward into another person's experience, of being genuinely curious about who they were and excited. Maybe you let yourself linger a little bit longer. Maybe you missed your bus or put off an appointment because you just wanted to keep talking to them. That's you in that state of generosity. And in the receiving state, which again was, I encourage you to go back and read last month's content, but as a recap, the receiving state is one that is being, it's softening, it's opening, it's being in complete union with what's happening to you from an inside perspective. So whereas the generous gaze is from the outside or from the inside out, the receiving is from the inside in. And in the receiving state, you can reach really, like if you're in a good conversation and someone asks you a question that just lands and you're just like, yeah, I want to answer this. I totally want to answer this. What happens is that there's a sensation. This is all happening in split seconds, but I'm going to break down what's happening. is you have a sensation in your body that leads you to have a desire. And then you offer some either a request or offer yourself. And then that response that you receive from that, if it's a positive, it's like what, if it's what you're looking for, then it feels so good. That's this formula for pleasure. Is you feel a sensation, you notice a desire, you either make a request or an action, and then you get the response that you're looking for. So if you are, someone asks you a question, they give you some question in conversation, and it's like question, you're like, yeah, I totally want to answer this. And there's a some sensation in your body, like maybe a rising up or like a lifting up of your head. And it leads to this desire to share a lot about that question. And then the other person responds and says, wow, really? And then they have another follow-up question. Or sometimes another way of getting pleasure is that you don't want to share so much. And so you're able to hide a little bit in your response. And then they go, oh, and then they either back away, depending on what you want, or they ask a little bit more of a different kind of question to see if that goes in. And so it's all about what your desire is there. If you want this person to be closer to you, you're going to get pleasure from them asking more intimate questions. If you want them to go away, you can get pleasure from that too by shutting them down. So I don't want you to get overly complicated with this stuff, because in conversation, we don't want to be spending a lot of time going, oh, am I in the generous state? Am I in the receiving state? Because then you become overly self-aware. We can practice this. We can absolutely practice this and feel what it feels like. And then you can reflect in a conversation. Okay, I feel like the spotlight's been on me for a long time. So I'm going to flip it and ask this person some questions, which is the key to a generous conversation, is to be asking questions, not necessarily talking about you, but asking questions of the other person. This is in, you know, the basic how to influence people, how to win friends and influence people, right? Is you ask them questions, but the key is that you cannot bombard them. You cannot bombard them with question after question after question, because then that feels intrusive. So what we're doing is, in a really good conversation, you don't even know that this is going on. There's just this seamless dance between the states, and each party is playing one piece, or maybe one party is playing more of one and the other party is playing the other one, and it really, really clicks. And this is a state of bliss. This is like that flow state that is often talked about when people are engaged in art and in deep, deep work. That flow state where the mind stops thinking so much and you're just there. You're not going into it being like, oh, okay, well, what story am I going to tell this person? And how much do I want to give here? There's just a yes between you both. And when you have that, the healing work of social interaction is present. And that's where it gets really powerful. It feels a lot like that point. So there's these two states in when we think about meditation. We think meditation, most of the time if I mention meditation to people who are not meditators, the first thing that they'll say is, oh, I can't get my mind to stop thinking. Good. You're not supposed to yet. The first stage of meditation is actually concentration. It's not that you're expected to sit down and just boop, go into the state of bliss and, you know, ease in your mind. It doesn't happen like that. It takes tremendous amounts of practice, concentration. That's why we have mantra. That's why we do all sorts of things to focus our minds in yoga. We focus our minds on one fixed point. We might say the name of a god. We might gaze at a candle. All of these things are meant to create focus. So let's see. So let me, that was, going off into a whole different thing. I got focused on that because it's a very, very important thing to understand. Oh yeah, this is where it comes back. When we are in a conversation, we are in a good conversation. We are incredibly focused. There are times when conversations are going on. You could be at a party and there's 14 conversations happening around you, but you are engrossed in yours, engrossed to the point that you can shut off your ears to anything else that's around you. And in the beginning, you must do that consciously. You must focus and listen to what the person's saying. And then if it flows well, if you get to that meditation state from the concentration, then you don't even have to think about it. You're just, your ears are off to whatever, anything else is going on, to anything else that's going on except for them. And that's a really blissful state to be in. So now the key to the generous side, because this is where we're talking right now, the key to the generosity in a conversation. So if you're at a party, I'm going to go back to these three scenarios. You're at a party, you don't know anyone, or you're on a date, or, you know, meeting up with a new friend for the first time, or you're at home with a person that you know really, really well. To be generous with them is to put your attention on them, to put your attention on them, to throw out the first ball. Now, the receiving partner will ideally catch that ball, but the ball has to be thrown first. The ball has to be thrown first. It's not a matter of, oh, this, you can't just wait for a person to know how to have a conversation with you. They're nervous too. They're nervous too. Even if it's a person that you know really well, there's a little bit of like, ooh, how are we going to dance to this? Like talking to a friend you haven't spoken to in a year. Like, okay, well, who are you now? How are we going to get into each other? And so you begin with this generous gaze. The key to it is asking a question. And we're going to just play with this on an energetic level with, like I said, super low stakes first. So we don't have, I'm not going to ask everyone to go around and asking questions, but what I want to do is just help you understand the energy that is required in order to find the thing that you want to ask a question about. Because it's not so simple. You see someone at a party and you're just like, I have to ask a question. And then it's a self-awareness game that happens, overly self-aware. Instead, what we're going to do is just play with the focus of attention and notice what happens. Notice how to get curious about something. We're going to choose an inanimate object. An inanimate object. So literally right now, as we move into this practice, look around and just find one thing. It could be something like this. This is artwork that my daughter gave me, okay? Beautiful necklace, right? It's just, she brings this stuff into me. It's adorable. And it sits on my desk and it's cute until I secretly throw it away after a few months. So so you're going to pick anything. It could be as simple as that. Anything at all. But let it just call to you. Don't try to pick the perfect thing. If you can pick it up, great, you don't have to. But either way, begin to focus your gaze, you focus your eyes directly on that object. And the first thing is to begin to notice why this particular object called to you. Don't analyze it, just receive it. We're practicing beginning in the receiving state. Trace your eyes or your hands or any other part of your body over this object. Notice the textures. Do you like the textures? Is there something about the textures you don't like? Notice in your body the sensations that are present as you gaze on or touch this object. If you gaze on one side or the other, what happens? How do you want to experience this object? And we're going to move to, that was the receiving state, so that you know what that feels like as a baseline. Because ultimately, to move into a state of generosity, we begin with receiving. We begin with this foundation of ourselves. Now we're going to move to the generous state. This is less self-aware. This is more about the other object's experience. So begin again to gaze or touch the object. And we're going to play with just thinking or saying out loud simple descriptions of what you see, color, texture, or shape. And notice it's not about what you like. So you're not saying, I like the color. It's saying the color is blue. The texture is rough with a little smoothness on the top. The shape, there's a little bit of a circle. So it's not an I like, it's not a self-reflection, that's a receiving state. This is a more objective way of talking about things. Very simple descriptions. There is a blue line. There are little dots. Looking at my webcam right now, there are little dots on the left and right side. There is a circle in the middle with a red point in the very center. Now we're going to move back to receiving. Just continue, we're going to play back and forth with these states. Tune again to your experience with this object. I like the blue lines on my webcam. I like the way that I can look directly at the camera and my neck remains straight. Play with that. Now back again to the generous state. There are words printed on the front of my camera. They are different words. One is the brand and it is bigger than the other word, which tells me how many pixels the camera allows. Move back to the receiving. I like the little dots on the speakers. And move back to the generous gaze. There is a protective sticker on the top of the camera that is still there. And we can just release both states and be here. So your energy shifted through the states. did you notice how it changed how you see that thing? Did anything deepen? Did anything close? What happened? Now imagine, you know, obviously in a conversation, it's very different from engaging with an inanimate object. These are human beings with feelings and stories and all sorts of experiences that make everybody uniquely, grotesquely beautiful. However, when we're practicing with inanimate objects, with just a simple description and receiving, description, receiving experience, it might be easier to understand how you might shift into seamless, beautiful conversation with another human. So we're going to spend the next few minutes journaling about these states. Which of these was easier? Which was more familiar? The receiving or the generous state? And if neither was easy, write about what you would do to shift something so to make it more pleasurable. How might you feel more comfortable doing this? We will let's go for 6 minutes.
Ule, 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 ule,
Malaya. Malaya, Makonami, Ule, Namale, Male, Ule, 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 Ule,
Okay, let's finish your final thoughts. So as you go out into the world again, as the world is sort of opening up at this point, pay attention in low stakes experiences. So you're at the grocery store. Notice what happens in small interactions with the checkout clerk. Notice those little banter kind of conversations that you have with people in your life, the mail carrier, your mechanic, whoever you talk to, or even your partner, people that you talk to frequently. Begin to notice when you're in a state of generosity and when you're in a state of receiving. Best to do this after, rather than trying to think about it in the middle of it. And then you can begin to cultivate intention around it. So let's say you really do want to know more about something that your spouse has said. And so you will perhaps ask a few pointed questions. You'll put your gaze on that person and you will notice what it is that you like, notice in a curious way something about that person that will then lead you to ask a question. And then listening to their response. This is not at all different from those two states I was talking about between concentration and meditation. No different. We have to get to meditation through concentration. We get to meaningful social interaction through concentration. We point our gaze to someone And then suddenly the rest of the world disappears. So I wish you luck out there. As you're re-emerging into this world, I wish you the best of luck in learning a new way to find this important part of the human experience of social interaction. None of us can live without it. Even if we're accustomed to ordering everything that we buy online and getting it delivered, or we work from home, never see anyone. None of us can live without this, at least a good life. At least a good life. So Greg, for having joined live, do you have any frames or thoughts that you'd like to share about your experience?
I do. The last journaling exercise and the practice leading up to it, it made me realize that even though the two states, the receiving and generosity, I'm aware of them during this practice and at other times, in this, what this brings to me is the recognition when I'm interacting with someone or just contemplating something or looking at this inanimate object that I chose across the yard, I have not really differentiated between the two. Mm-hmm. And in this practice, it was like I found myself generous, I was kind of do more in the receiving, and that was it pointed out yes, there are different, and it's not like it's pure one and then I'm gonna they kind of happen, but just recognizing the difference, it just allows for a cleaner, more intentional flow one direction or the other. It's like, oh yeah, that's what it is. It's like being in a conversation where someone's just trying to explain something and someone else wants to make a decision, but the other person just wants to, you know, tell the story or tell the thing. They're not connected. So this helps to do that. Anyway, so this will be very interesting to play with, very fun to play with.
That is exactly all of that is like what you said about the challenge. The worst conversations are when you have people who are not matched. They're not in a polarity. So there's a person who's just like, I just want to tell you all my stories. And then the other person's like, well, I want to tell you all my stories. And mm-hmm. so that they're bad conversations. And so you'll have a person, you'll share something that is intimate about you. And then they say, oh, and then this time that I was in Kentucky, you know, and it is a killer for that what we're looking for. It's like that same formula for pleasure that went from sensation to desire to response. It's the person. If you share something intimate and your desire is when you share something intimate is to be heard, is to be held, is to have some space for the other person to say, oh, wow, that sounds like it was very meaningful to you. But if the other person responds with, oh, and then this about me, it's like you're putting this polarity out here and they go whoop and they just miss it. They miss it. And so those are conversations that are like, they're dead from the start. You cannot retrieve, you cannot revive that conversation. That is the primary problem that I witness with people in a state of conversation. So I'm really glad that you said it so eloquently and we're able to really see, oh, this is, and it feels really good and generative when it's in that kind of tennis match. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Good practicing, looking at inanimate objects and also low stakes situations, those kind of one-off social interactions, and then try this on someone in a bigger situation. It will shift someone if they come to you in a very heightened emotional state. And what, so this is a different topic that at some point we'll have to do a whole different meeting on it. But when couples, for instance, or friends are arguing, the issue is rarely the thing. Rarely that you didn't do that thing that you said you were going to do, or, you know, you left this dish out, or you didn't put your shoes away. Like, it's not that. What it is that there's a dynamic that's upset between the power, between the two polarities of giving and receiving. And if a person in that dynamic were just one of them, that's all it takes, one of them were just to step out of their own self-awareness and just allow the other person's experience to be there, to hold it in a generous gaze, the fight will generally cease to exist. Likewise, if a person is being aggressive in how they are pushing on another in an argument, and if they were just to pause and put themselves into a state of, how do I actually feel? Like, so for instance, what I'm describing here is a person who might be very angry, very hostile, very like, I'm going to push you and I'm going to like prod you until you have a response, right? If that person were just to pause and feel into that receiving state and go, what am I so upset about, really? What is really happening with my state of mind? Putting themselves into that self-reflection, it will shift. The argument will cease to exist. So not only today have we covered how to have a conversation with a stranger or a person that you know really well, we've also covered very briefly how to stop a conversation from turning into an argument, which is another really, really important skill for right now, post-pandemic, right? Like, all of us are fighting with each other. And the thing, I've often said this, that I don't have sides. Like, I've never had a side on COVID. I have purposely not taken a side, but what I've done is I've really witnessed everyone's passions. People have tremendous passion about this topic. Should you wear a mask? Should you not wear a mask? Should you get the vaccine? Should you not get the vaccine? And people are so passionate about it. And what that speaks to is the fact that each side has a lot of work to do around just simply being able to say, I feel really strongly about this. Like, they're both pushing themselves out there, and it's a really sloppy way of having a conversation. They're just both yelling at each other. And it doesn't do anything. It doesn't ever resolve any problems. The only time somebody, like, if you force someone to like, the mandate was the thing that really, up here in Canada, there were these mandates that came out around it. And so they had forced, by not quite by law, but somewhat like that, forced people to comply with one side of the argument. And what really I feel like we're in need of right now is this like truth and reconciliation around all of the deep emotion, all of the values that these arguments really speak to, but that requires that each party is able to dance between these two states, to allow themselves first, we begin with the receiving state, to go in and go, what is it that I am expressing? What kind of value am I expressing with this deep, deep, deep emotion? And generously offering your attention to the other side and really listening to what they value, without trying to defend your own decisions or your own right to be. So it's really too bad I don't run the world in this post-COVID time, because this is what I would do. I'd have everyone stop and let's just all sit down in a circle and learn how to listen to each other again. Changes everything. All right. I'm going to leave it there for the month. Thank you, Greg, for joining live. Thank you for everyone who is watching this on the recording. I value everyone's participation in any way that you can do it. And I always love you live, but I'm super happy that you can just watch it on your own time or listen while you're doing dishes. It's the way I often catch up on my classes. Good luck out there. And remember to notice your generous state, your receiving state, and notice how you can lean into these and which is the appropriate time. Be well.
Thanks, Sonia.
Thank you.